Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
Those of you who follow stuff online, this is a double Torah study section, which means that we're covering two, which are, well, I shouldn't say traditionally broken apart, three, and not. Most of the time, they actually are together. This is Numbers chapter 30, all the way through the end of the book. So we're covering Numbers 30 through 36. So, Numbers chapter 30. Moses spoke to the heads of the tribes of the children of Israel, saying, "This is the thing the Lord has commanded. If a man takes a vow to the Lord, or swears an oath to establish a prohibition upon himself, he shall not desecrate his word. According to whatever comes from his mouth shall he do. If a woman will take a vow to the Lord, or establish a prohibition in her father's home in her youth, and her father heard of her vow, or her prohibition that she established upon herself, and her father was silent about her, then all her vows shall stand, and any prohibition that she established upon herself shall stand. But if her father restrained her on the day of his hearing, all her vows or prohibitions that she established upon herself shall not stand, and the Lord will forgive her, for her father had restrained her. If she shall be married to a man, and her vows were upon her, or an utterance of her lips, by which she had prohibited something upon herself, and her husband heard on the day of his hearing, he was silent about her, then her vows shall stand, and her prohibition that she established upon herself shall stand. But if on the day of her husband's hearing, he shall revoke the vow that is upon her, or the utterance of her lips, by which she had prohibited something upon herself, the Lord will forgive her. The vow of a widow or a divorcee, anything she had prohibited upon herself, shall remain upon her. But if she vowed in her husband's home, or she established a prohibition upon herself through an oath, and her husband heard and was silent about her, he did not restrain her, then all her vows shall stand, and any prohibition she established upon herself shall stand. But if her husband shall revoke them on the day of his hearing, anything that came out of her mouth regarding her oaths or the prohibition upon herself shall not stand. Her husband had revoked them, and the Lord will forgive her. Any vow and any oath prohibition to cause personal affliction, her husband may let it stand, and her husband may revoke it. If her husband shall be silent about her from day to day, he will have let stand all her vows or all the prohibitions that are upon her. He will have let them stand, for he was silent about her on the day of his hearing. But if he shall revoke them after having heard them, he shall bear her iniquity. These are the decrees the Lord commanded Moses between a man and his wife, between a father and his daughter in her youth, in her father's house. Chapter 31. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take vengeance for the children of Israel against the Midianites. Afterward you will be gathered unto your people." Moses spoke to the people, saying, "Arm men from among yourselves, the legion, that they may be against Midian, to inflict the Lord's vengeance against Midian. 1,000 from a tribe, 1,000 from a tribe, for all the tribes of Israel shall you send to the legion." So there were delivered from the thousands of the children of Israel, 1,000 from each tribe, 12,000 armed men for the legion. Moses sent them, 1,000 from each tribe for the legion, them and Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the Kohen, to the legion, and the sacred vessels and the trumpets for sounding in his hand. They massed against Midian as the Lord had commanded Moses, and they killed every male. They killed the kings of Midian along with their slain ones, Evi, Rekin, Zur, Hur, Riba, the five kings of Midian, and Balaam, son of Beor, they slew with the sword. The children of Israel took captive the women of Midian, and their young children, and all their cattle and flocks, and all their wealth they took as spoils. All the cities of the habitations, and all their palaces they burned in fire. They took all the booty and all the captives of the people and the animals. They brought to Moses, to Eleazar the Cohen, and the assembly of the children of Israel, the captives, the animals, and the booty to the camp, and the plains of Moab, which was by the Jordan near Jericho. Moses, Eleazar the Cohen, and all the leaders of the assembly went out to meet them outside the camp. Moses was angry with the commanders of the army, the officers of the thousands, and the officers of the hundreds, who came from the legion for the battle. Moses said to them, "Did you let every female live? Behold, it was they who caused the children of Israel, by the word of Balaam, to commit a betrayal against the Lord regarding the matter of Peor, and the plague that occurred in the assembly of the Lord. So now, kill every male among the young children, and every woman fit to know a man by lying with a male, you shall kill. But all the young children among the women who have not known lying with a male, you may keep alive for yourselves. And as for you, encamp outside the camp for a 7-day period. Whoever killed a person or touched a corpse shall purify yourselves on the 3rd day and the 7th day, you and your captives. And every garment, every vessel of hide, everything made of that which comes from goats, every vessel of wood, you shall purify." Eleazar the Cohen said to them, Eleazar the Cohen said to the men of the legion who came to battle, "This is the decree of the Torah, by which the Lord commanded Moses. Only the gold and the silver, the copper, the iron, the tin, and the lead. Everything that comes into the fire, you shall pass through the fire, and it will be purified. But it must be purified with the water of sprinkling, and everything that would not come into the fire, you shall pass through just the water. You shall immerse your garments on the 7th day and become purified. Afterward, you may enter the camp." The Lord said to Moses, saying, "Calculate the total of the captured spoils of people and animals, you, Eleazar the Cohen, and the heads of the fathers of the assembly. Divide the spoils in half between those who undertook the battle, who go out to legion, and the entire assembly. You shall raise up a tribute to the Lord from the men of war who go out to the legion, one living being of every 500 from the people, from the cattle and from the donkeys, and from the flocks. You shall take it from their half and give it to Eleazar the Cohen as a portion of the Lord. From the half that goes to the children of Israel, you shall take 1 out of 50 from the people, from the cattle, from the donkeys, from the flocks, from all the animals. You shall give them to the Levites, the guardians of the charge of the Lord's tabernacle." Moses and Eleazar the Cohen did as the Lord had commanded Moses. The animal booty, beyond the spoils the people of the legion took, the flock 675,000, and cattle 72,000, donkeys 61,000, human beings, the women who had not known lie with the male, all the souls 32,000. And the half which was the share of those who went out the legion was the count of the flock, 337,500. The tribute of the Lord from the flock, 675. The cattle, 36,000, and their tribute to the Lord, 72. The donkeys was 30,500. Their tribute to the Lord was 61. The human beings, 16,000. Their tribute to the Lord, 32 people. Moses gave the tribute that was raised up for the Lord to Eleazar the Cohen, as the Lord commanded Moses. From the half of the children of Israel that Moses had divided from the men of legions, the half the assembly that was of the flock was 337,500, and the cattle was 36,000, and the donkeys was 30,500, the human beings was 16,000. Moses took from the half of the children of Israel one drawn from 50 for the people and for the animals, and gave them to Levites, the guardians of the charge of the Lord's tabernacle, as the Lord had commanded Moses. The commanders of the thousands of legions, the officers of thousands, and the officers of hundreds approached Moses. They said to Moses, "Your servants took a census of the men of war under our command, and not a single man is missing. So we have brought an offering to the Lord. What any man found of gold, vessels, anklet and bracelet, ring, earring, and clasp, to atone for our souls before the Lord." Moses and Eleazar the Cohen took the gold from them, every fashioned vessel, All the gold that was raised up, which they set apart for the Lord, was 16,750 shekels. And from the officers of the thousands, the officers of the hundreds. As for the men of the legion, each man looted for himself. Moses and Eleazar the Cohen took the gold from the officers of the thousands and the hundreds and brought it into the tent of meeting, a remembrance for the children of Israel before the Lord. Chapter 32. Thank you. The children of Reuben, the children of Gad, had abundant of livestock, very great. They saw the land of Jazer, the land of Gilead, and behold, the place was a place for livestock. The children of Gad, the children of Reuben, came and said to Moses, to Eleazar the Cohen, and to the leaders of the assembly, saying, Ataroth, and Dibon, and Jazer, and Nimrah, and Heshbon, and Eliah, and Sebam, and Nebu, and Beon. The land the Lord smote before the assembly of Israel. It is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. They said, if we have found favor in your eyes, let this land be given to your servants as a heritage. Do not bring us across the Jordan. Moses said to the children of Gad and the children of Reuben, should your brothers go out to battle while you settle here? Why do you dissuade the heart of the children of Israel from crossing into the land the Lord has given them? This is what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. They went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, and they dissuaded the heart of the children of Israel not to come up to the land the Lord has given them. The wrath of the Lord burned on that day. He swore, saying, if these men who came up from Egypt from the age of 20 years and above will see the ground that I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, for they have not followed me fully, except for Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, son of Nun, for they followed the Lord fully. The wrath of the Lord burned against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Until the end of the entire generation that did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Behold, you have risen up in place of your fathers a society of sinful people to add more to the burning wrath of the Lord against Israel. If you will turn away after him, he will again let it rest in the wilderness, and you will destroy this entire people. So they approached him and said, pens for our livestock shall we build here, for our livestock and our cities, for our small children. We shall arm ourselves swiftly and in the vanguard of the children of Israel until we have brought them to their place, and our small children will dwell in these fortified cities before the inhabitants of the land. We shall not return to our homes. The children of Israel will have inherited, every man his inheritance. For we shall not inherit with them across the Jordan and beyond, for our inheritance has come to us on the east bank of the Jordan. Moses said to them, if you do this thing, if you arm yourselves before the Lord for battle, and every armed man among you shall cross the Jordan before the Lord, until he drives out his enemies before him, the land shall be conquered before the Lord, and then you shall return. Then you shall be vindicated from the Lord and from Israel. And this land shall be a heritage for you before the Lord. But if you do not do so, behold, you will have sinned to the Lord. Know your sin that will encounter you. Build for yourself your cities, for your small children, your pens for your livestock, and what has come from your mouth shall you do. So the children of Gad, the children of Reuben, said to Moses, saying, your servant shall do as the Lord commands. Our small children, our wives, our livestock, all our animals will be there in the cities of Gilead. And your servants shall cross over, every armed person from the legion, before the Lord to do battle, as my Lord speaks. Concerning them, Moses commanded Eleazar the Cohen, Joshua son of Nun, and the heads of the fathers of the tribe, the children of Israel. Moses said to them, if the children of Gad, the children of Reuben, will cross Jordan with you, everyone armed for battle before the Lord, and the land is conquered before you, you shall give them the land of Gilead as a heritage. But if they do not cross over armed with you, then they will take their heritage among you in the land of Canaan. The children of Gad and children of Reuben spoke up, saying, as the Lord has spoken to your servants, so shall we do. We shall cross over armed before the Lord to the land of Canaan, and ours shall be the heritage of our inheritance across the Jordan. So Moses gave to them, the children of Gad, the children of Reuben, and half the tribe of Manasseh, son of Joseph, the kingdom of Sihon, the king of the Amorite, the kingdom of Og, king of the Bashan, the land with its cities and its boundaries, the cities of the surrounding land. The children of Gad built Dibon and Ataroth and Arur, and Ataroth Shofan and Jazir and Yogbecha, and Beth Nimra and Beth Haran, fortified cities and pens for their flocks. The children of Reuben built Heshbon and Eliah and Kiriathaim and Nebu and Baalmeon with alternate names and Sibma, and they called them by other names instead of the names of the cities that had been built. The children of Machir, son of Manasseh, went to Gilead and captured it and drove out the Amorite who were in it. Moses gave the Gilead to Machir, son of Manasseh, and he settled in it. Yair, son of Manasseh, went and captured their villages and called them Havot Yair. Noba went to capture Kenat and her suburbs and called it Noba after his own name. Chapter 33. These are the journeys of the children of Israel who went forth to the land of Egypt according to their legions. Under the hand of Moses and Aaron, Moses wrote their goings forth according to their journeys at the bidding of the Lord. And these were their journeys according to their goings forth. They journeyed from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the month, on the day after the Pesach offering. The children of Israel went forth with an upraised hand before the eyes of all Egypt. And the Egyptians were burying those among them whom the Lord had struck. Every firstborn, and on their gods the Lord had inflicted punishments. The children of Israel journeyed from Ramses and encamped at Sukkot. They journeyed from Sukkot and encamped at Etam, which is on the edge of the wilderness. They journeyed from Etam, and it turned back to Pihahiroth, which is before Baal Zephon, and they encamped before Migdol. They journeyed from before Hiroth and passed through the midst of the sea toward the wilderness. They went on a 3-day trip in the wilderness of Etam, and they encamped in Marah. They journeyed from Marah and arrived at Elam. In Elam were 12 springs of water and 70 date palms, and they encamped there. They journeyed from Elam and encamped by the Sea of Reeds. They journeyed from the Sea of Reeds and encamped in the wilderness of Sin. And they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin and encamped in Dophka. They journeyed from Dophka and encamped in Alush. They journeyed from Alush and encamped in Rephidim. Now there was no water there for the people to drink. They journeyed from Rephidim and encamped in the wilderness of Sinai. They journeyed from the wilderness of Sinai and encamped in Kibbutz Hatava. They journeyed from Kibbutz Hatava and encamped in Hetzroth. They journeyed from Hetzroth and encamped in Ritma. They journeyed from Ritma and encamped in Ramon Perez. They journeyed from Ramon Perez and encamped in Libna. They journeyed from Libna and encamped in Risa. They journeyed from Risa and encamped in Kehalatha. And they journeyed from Kehalatha and encamped in Mount Sephir. They journeyed from Mount Shavir and encamped in Haradah. They journeyed from Haradah and encamped in Machilot. They journeyed from Machilot and encamped in Tahat. They journeyed from Tahat and encamped in Terah. They journeyed from Terah and encamped in Mitka. They journeyed from Mitka and encamped in Hashmona. They journeyed from Hashmona and encamped in Moserot. They journeyed from Moserot and encamped in Bnei Jachan. They journeyed from Bnei Jachan and encamped in Hor Hagidah. Hor Hagidgad. Got that right? They journeyed from Hor Hagidgad and encamped in Jotbatha. They journeyed from Jotbatha and encamped in Abrona. They journeyed from Abrona and encamped in Ezon Gibir. They journeyed from Ezon Gibir and encamped in the wilderness of Zin, which is Kadesh. They journeyed from Kadesh and encamped in Mount Hor, the edge of the land of Edom. Then Aaron, the Kohen, went up to Mount Hor at the word of the Lord and died there in the 40th year of the children of Israel went forth to the land of Egypt in the 5th month on the 1st day of the month. Aaron was 123 years old at his death on Mount Hor. The Canaanite king of Arad heard. He was dwelling in the south of the land of Canaan. He approached the children of Israel. Now they journeyed from the Mount Hor and encamped at Zalmunna. They journeyed from Zalmunna and encamped at Punon. They journeyed from Punon and encamped in Obot. They journeyed from Obot and encamped in the ruins of the passes at the border of Moab. They journeyed from the ruins and encamped at Dibon Gad. They journeyed from Dibon Gad and encamped in Ammon Dibalathamia. They journeyed from Ammon Dibathali, and encamped the mountains of the passes before Nebo. They journeyed from the mountains of the passes and the camps in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. They encamped by the Jordan from Beth Shemot until the plains of Shittim and the plains of Moab. The Lord spoke to Moses, the plains of Moab, by the Jordan, the Jericho, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, When you cross the Jordan to the land of Canaan, you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land before you. You shall destroy all their prostration stones. All their molten images shall you destroy. All their high places shall you demolish. You shall possess the land and you shall settle in it. For to you have I given the land to possess it. You shall give the land as an inheritance by lot to your families. To the many you shall increase its inheritance, and to the few you shall decrease its inheritance. Wherever its lot shall fall, his shall be, according to the tribes of your fathers, and shall you inherit. But if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, those them whom you leave shall be pins in your eye, and a surrounding barrier of thorns in your sides. And they will harass upon you the land which you dwell. And it shall be that what I had meant to do to them, I shall do to you. Chapter 34. A lot of reading. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, and say to them, When you come to the land of Canaan, this the land that shall fall to you as inheritance, the land of Canaan according to its borders. Your southern side shall be from the wilderness of Zin, at the side of Edom. And your southern border shall be from the edge of the Salt Sea to the east. The border shall go around south, Amachal Akarabim, and shall pass toward Zin, and its outskirts shall be the south of Kadesh Barnea. Then it shall go out to Hazar Adar and pass to Azmon. The border shall go around Azmon to the stream of Egypt, and its outskirts shall be toward the sea. The western border, it shall be for you the great sea and the district. This shall be for you the western border. This shall be for you the northern border. From the great sea shall you turn to Mount Hor. From Mount Hor you shall turn the approach of Hamat, and the outskirt of the border shall be toward Zedad. The border shall go forth toward Ziphron, and its outskirt shall be Hazer Enan. This shall be for you the northern border. You shall draw for yourselves as the eastern border from Hazer Enan to Shepham. The border shall descend from Shephon to Riblah, east of Ain. The border shall descend and extend to the bank of the Kinneret Sea to the east. The border shall descend to the Jordan, and its outskirts shall be the Salt Sea. This shall be the land for you, according to its borders all around. Moses commanded the children of Israel, saying, This is a land that you shall divide as an inheritance by lot, which the Lord has commanded to give to the 9.5 tribes. The tribe of the children of Reuben have taken according to their father's house, and the tribe of the children of Gad according to their father's house, and half the tribe of Manasseh have taken their inheritance. 2.5 tribes have taken their inheritance on the bank of the Jordan by the Jericho, eastward toward the sunrise. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, These are the names of the men who are to take possession of the land for you. Elzar the Kohen, and Joshua son of Nun, and one leader from each tribe shall you take to possess the land. These are the names of the men for the tribe of Judah, Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and the tribe of children of Simeon, Shemuel, son of Amud. For the tribe of Benjamin, I'm on verse 21. The tribe of Benjamin, Eliad, son of Kislon. For the tribe of the children of Dan, as leader, Buki, son of Jogli. For the children of Joseph, the tribe of the children of Manasseh as leader, Haniel, son of Ephod. And the tribe of the children of Ephraim as leader, Kemuel, son of Shiftan. The tribe of the children of Zebulun as leader, Elisvan, son of Parnach. The tribe of the children of Issachar as leader, Patiel, son of Azan. the tribe of the children of Asher as leader, Ahihud, son of Shilomi. The tribe of the children of Naphtali as leader, Pedahiel, son of Amud. These are the ones from whom the Lord commanded to approach the children of Israel in the land of Canaan. Chapter 35. Yeah, break here. Chapter 35. The Lord spoke to Moses on the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, command the children of Israel that they shall give to Levites from the heritage of their possession cities for dwelling and open space for the cities all around them. So you give the Levites. The city shall be theirs for dwelling. Their open space shall be for their animals, for their wealth, and for all their needs. The open spaces of the cities, and you shall give to the Levites from the wall of the city outward 1,000 cubits all around. You shall measure from the outside of the city on the eastern side 2,000 cubits. The southern side 2,000 cubits. Western side 2,000 cubits. Northern side 2,000 cubits. With the city in the middle. This shall be for them the open spaces of the city. The cities that you shall give to the Levite, 6 cities of refuge shall you provide for a murderer to flee. And in addition to them, you shall give 42 cities. All the cities that you shall give the Levites, 48 cities, from them and their open spaces. The cities that you shall give from the possession of the children of Israel, from the many you shall increase, and from the few you shall decrease, each according to his inheritance that they shall inherit, he shall give of his cities to the Levites. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, when you cross Jordan, the land of Canaan, you shall designate cities for yourselves, cities of refuge shall they be for you, and a killer shall flee there, one who takes a life unintentionally. The city shall be for you a refuge from the avengers. The killer will not die until he stands before the assembly for judgment. As the cities that you shall designate, there shall be on the Jordan on three... On the other side of Jordan, there should be 3 cities should designate in the land of Canaan. They should be cities of refuge. The children of Israel, the proselyte, and the resident among them, shall these total 6 cities be refuge. For anyone who kills a person unintentionally is to flee there. Verse 16. If he had struck him with an iron implement and he died, he is a killer. The killer shall surely be put to death. Or if with a hand-sized stone by which one could die, and he should strike him, and he died, he is a killer. The killer shall be surely put to death. Or if he struck him with a hand-sized wood implement by which one could die, and he died, he is a killer. The killer shall be surely put to death. The avenger of blood, he shall put the killer to death. When he encounters him, he shall put him to death. If he pushed him out of hatred or hurled upon him from ambush, and he died, or in enmity struck him with his hand and he died, the assailant shall surely be put to death. He is a murderer. The avenger of blood shall kill the murderer when he encounters him. But if with suddenness, without enmity, did he push him, or he hurled any implement upon him without ambush, or with any stone through which one could die, without having seen and caused it to fall upon him and he died, but he was not his enemy and did not seek his harm, then the assembly shall judge between the assailant and the avenger of blood, according to these laws. The assembly shall rescue the murderer from the hand of the avenger of the blood, and the assembly shall return him to his city of refuge where he had fled. He shall dwell until the death of the Kohen Gadol, whom one had anointed with the sacred oil. But if the murderer will ever leave the border of the city of refuge to which he had fled, and the avenger of blood shall find him outside the border of a city of refuge, and the avenger of blood will kill the murderer, he has no blood guilt. For he must dwell in his city of refuge until the death of Kohen Gadol. And after the death of Kohen Gadol, the murderer shall return to the land of his possession. These shall be for you a decree of justice for your generations in all your dwelling places. Whoever smites a person according to the testimony of the witnesses shall one kill the murderer. But a single witness shall not testify against a person regarding death. You shall not accept ransom for the life of a murderer who is worthy of death, for you shall surely be put to death. You shall not accept ransom for one who fled to his city of refuge to return and dwell at the land for the death of the Kohen Gadol. You shall not bring guilt upon the land which you are, for the blood will bring guilt upon the land. The land will not have atonement for the blood that was spilled except through the blood of the one who spilled it. You shall not contaminate the land in which you dwell, in whose midst I rest, for I, the Lord, who rests among the children of Israel. Chapter 36. The heads of the fathers of the families of the children of Gilead, the son of Machir, son of Manasseh, and the children, families of the children of Joseph approached, spoke before the Lord and before its leaders, the heads of the fathers of the children of Israel. They said, "The Lord has commanded my master to give the land as an inheritance by lot to the children of Israel. And my master has been commanded by the Lord to give the inheritance of Zelophehad, our brother, to his daughters. If they become wives of one of the other sons of the tribes of the children of Israel, then their inheritance will be subtracted from the inheritance of our fathers and be added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they marry. And we subtract it from the lot of our inheritance. And when the Jubilee will arrive for the children of Israel, their inheritance will be added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they were married. And from the inheritance of the tribe of our fathers will their inheritance be subtracted." Moses commanded the children of Israel according to the word of the Lord, saying, "Correctly to the tribe of the children of Joseph speak. This is the word the Lord has commanded regarding the daughters of Zelophehad, saying, let them be wives to whomever is good in their eyes, but only to the family of their father's tribe shall they become wives. An inheritance of the children of Israel shall not make rounds from tribe to tribe. Rather, the children of Israel shall cleave every man to the inheritance of the tribe of his fathers. Every daughter who inherits inheritance of the tribes of the children of Israel shall become the wife of someone from a family of her father's tribe, so that everyone of the children of Israel will inherit the inheritance of his fathers. An inheritance shall not make rounds from tribe to another tribe. For the tribes of the children of Israel shall cleave every man to his own inheritance. As the Lord commanded Moses, so the daughters of Zelophehad do. Mahalah, Tizra, Hoglah, Milcah, and Noah, the daughters of Zelophehad, became wives of sons of their uncles to cousins, for the families of the children of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, did become wives, and their inheritance remained with the tribe of the family of their fathers. These the commandments and the ordinance the Lord commanded through Moses to the children of Israel in the plains of Moab at Jordan by Jericho. Hazik, Hazik, Barish Hazik. It's a crazy amount of reading. It's not true. Frequently, these two, the two sections, Matzot and Matzi, are read together. But some years, if there's enough Shabbats in between a given year, because there's leap years such that throw in there, they will break them into two separate readings. But this year, they're jumbled together as one.
I was wondering why.
So it's six, really, yeah. Long. It's a six straight chapters instead of, it's not quite three and three, it's like two and four. Anyway, it breaks up differently as far as how they're broken apart. Normally. I keep saying normally. Forget to drop that word in my mouth. It's not normally. Frequently, it's actually together. Yes.
In chapter 31.
31.
Really?
Which verse?
In chapter 31, the men did not kill the women. What did the women do that they were supposed to be killed?
Yes. We'll discuss that. Well, might as well mention it now. Back in, I believe it was chapter 24, 25? I remember the exact chapter number. Do you remember a man? There was a man named Balaam, or Baal. Balaam, thank you. Son of Beor. The donkey guy. Balaam. So the donkey guy. Remember the donkey guy?
Yeah, the donkey guy.
Everyone remembers him. So he came, he was a curse to all of Israel, right? And he came, and what did he do? He blessed them all. But then afterward, he conspired against the people of Israel and convinced the children of Moab and of Midian to send their daughters, their whatever female was available, to go over to seduce the males of Israel to make them commit harlotry with them in their worship of their gods and however they wish to worship. So that's what they did. 24,000 Israelites were killed as a result from God being angry at this act. So because those two tribes used their women to seduce the men of Israel into whatever debauchery they chose to do, it is the women being, although they are the tool used, they are not the actor of the tool, they're still the tool used, the tool is still at fault also. It's much like...
What's the time frame on this? Was it the generation that actually went in and did this that supposed to be slain, or was it their children?
All of this is happening within the past, roughly past year.
How much?
1 year from the time which they're going in Jordan. It's about that one time slot. It's all a very short period of time. It's all one thrust. So Balaam, son of Beor, that was his idea. Because he knew these people were great, holy, God was with them, wonderful. He knew, okay, what's the weakness? Women. Funny how it is. Men are really don't change much. We don't. Mm-hmm. So that's what he did, and that was the problem. So it's not much different than a few chapters, actually, many books later. So the prophets point out that God may use something, for example, Assyria, to come in and strike, correct northern Israel or Judah or Babylon or anybody else, all these to come into it to make corrections. And he warns those countries, don't think it's because your greatness I'm using you to strike these individuals. You are my tool, and beware, I'm going to strike you for it later. So just because it's the person wielding the tool is the person you are concerned with, but the tool itself is also to be concerned with too. It's a force you reckon with. So in this case, the women were the tool, the men were the ones wielding it. But the women didn't stop it. They didn't say, no, I'm not going to sleep with somebody I don't even know. No way. They didn't resist. So it's still the tool that was partially at fault with the same process. So all the men, because of this event, got whacked. And then almost all the women who were involved or who could have known a man also got taken out. We ask, well, what about the little boys? We always ask, what about the little boys?
Right.
They weren't part of it, right? Why does God say kill the baby boys, all the little kids? What's wrong with them? There's also an inherent problem in the cycle of this time in history, which isn't much different today, actually. As a general rule, who teaches children?
Mom
specifically. When you're teaching them about your history, your life, how to do this, how to cook, how to clean, how to read, how to write, who does most of that?
Mom
usually does. So if the mom is a Midianite, and the little boy is a Midianite, from his dad was such and such, was killed by however many years ago, what's the mom teaching the little boy? Right. Revenge. Your dad was so-and-so. He was such and such. He was this great person that was whacked by this man who I'm now married to. I assume. Hopefully not. But little boy is raised by the mom. You will notice this is repeated. It's a thematic problem that happens with many people in the Bible. Recall Solomon's children? A number of them were raised by their moms. And what was the problem with some of them? Who were some of their moms? All foreign women. And what happened? He polluted the land. And many of the subsequent kings, not just from Solomon, but many kings followed, depending on who the mom was, dictated what kind of man the king became. Because the king followed in his mother's footsteps, not his father's so much. Typically means a woman is the one who's teaching. So when you have young Midianite little boys growing up saying, I don't belong here, I don't belong here, I don't belong here, I don't belong here, this land is actually mine, doesn't belong to you, I should have it, not you. And they grow up thinking that, what's going to happen when they are physically able to fight? Yeah, they'll turn on you. So what does God say? Boys, get rid of them. Get rid of them. Go, get rid of them. Now we think, oh, how awful, how terrible. What the long lives these boys could have lived in. They could have been righteous people. That's true, they could have been. But who's smarter, you and me or God? Just take a wild guess. Now, God is the one who's making this decision. He knows what the future holds. Now, in many instances, not many, a few instances in the Bible you record, that they did not do so. And what happens later? Exactly what we're just discussing. It becomes a serious problem and it winds up biting you seriously in the rear end. That's the issue. Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, and one of the things that God reminds us a lot on is that he's the one who can kill and can make alive again. So, you know, there's always the hope of God's mercy, and that at a time, sometime in the future, the lies will be taken away.
Reevaluated, yes. And that is the other issue, that death is not a permanent thing as far as God's concerned. It's permanent to us, not to anybody else, or not to him. I mean, as far as he's concerned, it's a temporary state of being. So it's not permanent. It's not forever. It's a matter of a state. Now, we look at, well, the same issue we brought up with the Amalekites. Recall when they were coming out of Egypt, the Amalekites fought and attacked, and they killed some of the Israelites coming out. And God said, all right, fight them back. Moses, there'll come a time which I'm going to wipe out all of Amalek, which happens to be roughly the time of Saul. Not exactly. He didn't do a very good job. He's supposed to. He fell short of it. But that was his job, to wipe out Amalek then. Well, what, 400 years later? A little bit late, don't you think? A little bit late? But that was God's plan. He was going to allow Amalek to grow 400 years, set them aside until it was time to crush them. Okay. Well, why would God hold somebody guilty of a sin that happened 400 years prior by somebody who they don't even know? These children, these men, these women of Amalek get wiped out roughly 400 years after the event occurred. Well, is that just? Is that right? Well, you have to say yes, it would have to be right, because God's one deciding it. Now, we can ask, well, but nothing. God's one deciding it. He knows these people of Amalek, they benefited from the destruction of the weak and the elderly and the slow of children of Israel. They came and attacked the ones in the outskirts, the ones that weren't traveling quick enough. Came and slaughtered them. Well, is that right? How do we avenge those individuals who got killed unjustly? This is how we humans deal with these problems, how God corrects for it. So you wipe out the benefactors of that sin. It happens a few times in your Bible. So if you haven't figured with it now or haven't read it yet, familiarize yourself with the theme, because that happens again and again and again, and get used to it. That's how it works. God doesn't mince words when it comes to this type of issue. Any questions or comments I can talk to you before I go into my spiel about what I'm going to talk about today? I have a whopping half hour. Yes?
Did they do the red heifer cleaning? Because it was talking about the third day and then the seventh day. Were they doing the red heifer thing?
Yes, that's the purification water. Yes. You touched a dead body or killed a person. That was part of that cleaning. Any questions or comments so far? Yes, Pat.
Did they have to be there until the priest died?
Ah, we're talking about that today. That's a good, good question. The city of refuge is an interesting issue.
Well, did they have to leave when the priest died?
Have to? Not exactly. If the priest, yeah, it is. If the priest died, you wouldn't have to leave the city of refuge. But the city of refuge is not yours.
They're there to be saved. This is a message.
As long as the priest is alive. Then they're free.
To leave, and then the person can kill him.
No. Person's not allowed to kill him then. Once a priest dies, all guilt is wiped away. If the person comes to kill him, he is now a premeditated murderer.
Oh.
And he becomes executed for doing so. The avenger of blood is now lying in wait for a person to come out who is now an innocent individual. And killing an innocent man and premeditatedly. So they become a murderer then.
While he lives?
Sort of. That's kind of how it works. We're going to discuss the symbols behind that when we get to that section. It's an interesting way, interesting picture of how God's doing this. Because the high priest, of course, is only one individual during their lifetimes. And we understand him as Messiah himself. And so this is how the belief or the trust in him and the death of him fixes these issues. That's what the symbolism is about. Yes, John. Avenger of blood. It can be two groups, two individuals are typically done so. The avenger of... No, not that. No. Avenger. Not the movie. Avenger. Two groups can be an avenger. It is typically, though not always, a relative. Most of the time, the avenger of blood... Now, by the way, I have terrible markers. There isn't a police force yet established here. There isn't an FBI. There isn't an investigation. There isn't the CIA. None of those organizations exist, or any version thereof. So when somebody does something wrong, who arrests you? Now, if there are no police, who then arrests you?
God. I had no idea.
Yeah. Who would do it? How do you fix the... Yeah, how do you deal with it? Exactly. Usually the tribe will say, okay, I will assign so-and-so Bob 7, 8, 9, and 10, your job is to go arrest the people when I say go arrest them. Now, when they have kings later on, the kings have soldiers and have servants to go out and do this type of work. At this point in time, there's no such thing as the kings. They have their leaders, which is their father's houses, and they have their family. Right, and they have their tasks in that way. But arresting is not really done in the way which we think of arresting. So there is like a prison they have, you know, stuck in the middle of the desert and they throw everybody in there. It doesn't work that way. So they don't build prisons. So the Avenger, when a wrong has been done, this is regarding life and death. It's not regarding, he insulted my wife. There's no slander here. We're not discussing it. You don't avenge me for slander. This is execution. Somebody died. Someone didn't die. So Avenger death usually is a relative. So father, uncle, brother, whatever it is, relative. Terrible workers. It's sure. We'll blame the board. You have to be assigned. Your family, the victim's family, would assign which relative does it. Now, what if, for example, you're in the family of Zelophehad? He has all daughters. There are no immediate, family go do this type of assignment. What would you do? Then you would ask or request somebody else amongst your relatives that might do it. So you may have, usually it is an immediate relative, a brother, a dad, a husband. Sometimes it is an extended relative, a cousin, a member of your father's house, a great distant cousin of like third, fourth, fifth removed, whoever it may be, and in which case they can be assigned to the task. And there are some individuals who are for hire. That happens too. They're hitmen. They like to do it. That's the type of work they do. There are a few like that. And the Bible actually refers to one of them in an instance who is technically a member of Saul's crew, his men, but he is he's a keeper, but he's also a spy and likes to execute people. He's an assassin as well. So any of those individuals can be do the task, but it is usually a relative. And why is it usually relative? They care. There's emotion behind it. There's purpose. There's objective and reason. There's the son they've lost, or the daughter, or the whatever it was. That's usually what matters. And more importantly, you can forgive. See, relatives can forgive. A hired assassin doesn't. Your job, dude, you've been hired, go do the job. Relatives, it's important when you can see as a father or a brother or whatever, you have the ability as avenger in your family saying, hey, let's not avenge this. Maybe years go by. Time has waned and it's no longer as raw in you. You have the capability of saying, I'm not going to pursue this. Hired men don't. Our attorney generals don't. So-and-so dies. The attorney general says, it's my job to go do this. Well, attorney general. Well, whatever they're called. I can't think of what they're called. The people who run for office for doing this at the top. Prosecutor, that's the word I'm thinking of. Prosecutors. They don't. They are assigned to defend or stand before this person who's died and stand for them to the extreme until they can no longer do it anymore. Regardless of what the family of that victim may think, feel, or have forgiveness for. There is value in using a relative in that capacity. The capacity of forgiveness exists. It doesn't exist to a hired person. Does that make sense so far? Okay, any other questions? Yes, Jeff.
Might be interesting to talk about the limits of a avenger of blood.
There are certain very specific limits. This is... So, you refer to the term eye for eye, tooth for tooth, life for life, that kind of thing. There is a task assigned. You don't get to arbitrarily run through and kill everybody that did anything wrong. You have a certain task and you must wait and do your job at the time which is assigned. So, an avenger, let's say so-and-so, I don't know, killed your brother with a rock. He was driving around, he hit it with his car, rock fell over, killed so-and-so. Oh, sorry, killed your brother with a rock. Okay, there's a rock. It's an accidental death, but still officially a death. You were careless driving, who knows? No difference. So so-and-so is now a murderer or a killer. The Avenger doesn't get to sit there and torture the person to death. It's not a task of victim to, now I'm going to make you pay for this evil. It isn't done that way. It is an execution style. That's all it's supposed to be. There is no assistance. You know, we sit there and hire a bunch of people. Oh, let's all gang up on them. This isn't mob rule. It's individual. Normally, we assume, just an assumption, the person who's about to be executed for killing so-and-so else over here, they are not fighting the process. But we don't know. So the Avenger has rules he has to obey. Hey, this is a better marker. Rule number one, no hunting. You cannot go through, drag the person out, or find them waiting and waiting and waiting until they finally make one step outside the city boundaries. Shoot him now! It doesn't work that way. You are stalking and hunting. That's not part of the Avengers' rules. The person must, of their own accord, exit the city of refuge on their own will, for whatever reason they wish to do so, and you happened upon them. So this isn't hunting. No capturing. There's no kidnapping is not permitted. No capture. You don't get to go into the city, drag the person out, or trick them to come out in order to kill them. That's not permitted either. You can't say, oh, look, there's another bill on the ground. Look, look, go pick it up. You have a glove in your hand. That's in order to trick. Okay, a dollar may not be worth it. But the point is, you don't get to trick the person to come out in order to try to kill them. So there's no hunting, no capture. I didn't spell it right. This is spelled with P. It's like P and capture. I invent new words. Capture. No capturing. And there's no assistance. No assistance.
I don't remember reading this before.
Simple. Hunting. You're premeditated. You have heard that before.
Committing murder also.
If you that's the nature of premeditated. Capture, that's called kidnapping. You have heard these words before.
Yeah.
No assistance. Assistance means there has been a ruling against the individual. His assistance means you have, like, a court has ruled so-and-so, you didn't do this act, in fact, premeditated. Now everybody must assign to go kill you. That is called the execution of the you're guilty, the blood execution. When you're getting assistance, you are no longer an avenger, you are avengers. You are many instead of one. So, a lynch mob, another way of wording it. So, no lynch mob. Yes.
Daniel, if a person killed a relative of mine by accident, can I choose forgiveness over avenging?
You can, yes. You have that option. It is within your...
I don't have to go kill the
person. No, you do not. You don't have to do any of the sort. The avenger blood is in order to take care of sins or blood guilts. Now, just because you don't assign an avenger does not mean God will forgive the person. It's that you have forgiven them. Doesn't mean that God's forgiven them. There's a big difference between the two of them. God has a specific rule about avenging someone and forgiveness. They are not guiltless until the high priest dies, regardless of what you think, say, want, or do. Right.
God told the people, don't touch him.
Right. That was God's decision, how he runs this.
That he would take
care
of him.
We think of avengers are killing a person in flesh and blood. Well, God is also a spiritual blood guilt that's associated too. Sorry, Bill, you had your hand up? Oh, okay. No, I guess I have more. So, in this instance, we're talking about physical things. Now, as far as I wrote here, hunting, capturing, assistance, it's these things. Premeditated, okay, no lynch mobs. Those are the Torah doesn't use the word lynch mob, but it does use the mob execution style. All of this stuff, the lynch mob process, the premeditated, that has to be decided via a court. A court has to do it.
Because when they stone someone
outside the city. Everybody participates, correct. That would be the lynch mob, so to speak, is the court has ruled so-and-so, you must be executed for your actions, whatever it may be. Everybody go grab your stones or whatever, or Avenger, whoever was assigned to this, you may go kill the person accordingly, whatever the court decides at that time. All this stuff requires the court to decide it, not the Avenger. The Avenger, his only job is to wait for the court's decision, or if the court is delaying in making a decision and the person happens along the side, you have the opportunity to do so if they are not in a city of refuge. So that the Avenger has two ways which they kill the individual who did the crime. Either by they happen to be in the street and they're not in a city of refuge and the person's there, they can kill them. Or they wait the court rules. This person must be executed. Those are the two options the Avenger has. There isn't a, like, hey, everybody, let's gang up. Let's trick him. Let's drag him out of the city. None of that stuff works. That becomes, you become a murderer then. You're no longer an Avenger. In which case, you are now subject to the death penalty.
Do you remember where it said in the scriptures where all the people who saw something or other had to be the ones that stoned the person?
Yes.
Nobody else was.
Yeah, I believe that was the stick collector, wasn't it? I think it was the stick collector, the guy who collected sticks. And blasphemer too, yeah. Everyone who saw or heard, those are the ones who had to do it. Death penalty requirements, which a court requires, as mentioned here, two witnesses. Requires two. If there's only one witness, it specifically says that witness may not testify against the individual if there's a murder, if it's a death penalty case. Two, independent ones. Yes, Anne. He's wise.
I'm thinking of the court. I'm thinking of the different courts that Jesus went to, where they were trying him.
Yes.
All right. So we know that they were drummed up false accusations. Yeah. But they actually had three courts decide on his. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I think that there was a city, too, that had decided that they didn't want him in their city, and they came at him with rocks.
I can't remember. I don't remember which city it was, but yes, it did happen a couple times, actually. Capernaum did it? I can't remember. Now, if you recall, in Messiah's time, were there any cities of refuge left? Well, the cities existed, but under Roman rule. So now Roman law applies, not biblical law. Biblical law, Messiah would have walked free. Biblical law, sorry, he didn't murder anybody, so this is not a death penalty case. He didn't blaspheme anything, it's not a death penalty case. So guess what? He walks free. Biblical law, he just walks free. There's no point to arrest, no court required. They were stepping outside biblical law into man's law. So that's a different story. They were capturing and trying to trick, and they got assistance. They did the whole work, something you could possibly do to trick the guy out. Now, admittedly, Messiah was not in a city of refuge at the time which he was found. Use the term very loosely, found. So he didn't have that, but he didn't kill anybody, so the city of refuge wouldn't do any good. Let's pretend somebody is a thief. A thief, someone who steals. And they run to a city of refuge. Do they have refuge there? No, they don't. This only applies to killers, not thieves. Accidental killers, yes, but not thieves, not con artists, not swindlers, any of the sort, embezzlers, none of that. There's no city of refuge for any of those. This is for accidental killers only, who are awaiting trial. So all those other crimes someone may commit have no bearing on the city of refuge. It doesn't apply. Does that make sense? This is only for accidental killers. Well, right, they're associated. For you steal something, there's court rules and court fines. I'm a little off topic. Any questions? Oh, yes, go ahead.
I'm just wondering, how does this apply to the stoning of Stephen? Was that unbiblical then? Is that unlawful?
Yeah, completely. It's totally outside of the rules. And when Rome came over, who took him first? See, they were going back and forth with Asmoneans, and then they went through... That doesn't matter. When the other countries came over and took over the land... All laws change. Notice that usually happens. When conquerors come in, they have their laws, they impose on anybody else. So, all the laws get thrown out the window, and so now the people of Israel were allowed to use any law they chose, or they so happened to think was a good fit, to apply any way they saw fit. It didn't, they were not following the Torah in its requirements of anything of the sort. In the form, when it comes to execution, it's pretty rare, but it does happen in the Bible a few times. At their time, they were using a perversion of many different laws in order to circle around, in order to kill the man, men who should not have been killed. So they're twisting in a series of laws to get there. It's not like just breaking, they're actually twisting a whole bunch of them. Not just one, it's many. In order to make a circular reasoning to kill somebody. And it was completely outside the Torah's limit. If anybody felt the Torah in that time, all would say, he walks. But he walks free. Now, he hasn't done nothing wrong. There's no crime here. But they weren't following the Torah. They were following God's word. They're following their own. Make sense? Okay. God's laws doesn't allow for accidental executions. There's no accidental executions. You did it on purpose. You either did it right or did it wrong, but you killed somebody. So accidentally executed somebody. Right? And all those were executions that were done on purpose outside of God's laws. Make sense? Any questions so far? I didn't get very far at all yet. Let's go back a little bit, because we're jumping into an area I didn't want to talk about just yet. So I'll erase this.
This is going to be used in the day of judgment.
Well, if you're going to be able to judge what is right and what is wrong, which we're all assigned and tasked to do, we have to teach our children what's right and wrong, right? You have to know the reason behind it. Why is something right? Why is something wrong? What makes something fair? What makes something unfair? Well, the laws of God give you lots of examples, lots of case studies of almost every single law written. So, if there's an example given of almost every law written, then you have a general idea of when to apply something and when not to. And then these laws are written that way. So, in this case, let's back up. Numbers 30. Okay, a few minutes left. So, there's a neder and an oath. They're not the same thing. There is not, technically speaking, an English word. We use the word vows in our English text. Vow is not not a true word for it. There's no English equivalent to the Hebrew word neder. Neder there's a group of English words that work for it, but not a single one. Neders are a prohibition, or an obligate. To prohibit or obligate one's self. Now, this is the neder part. Yeah, the vows. I was to either that something is either permitted or to what's the right word? I prohibit myself of something regarding an object. Itself regarding. Not an action, an object. I'll explain. No, not idol worship. Neder is to prohibit or obligate yourself regarding an object. So, for example, let's say Bob Shmuley offended my son because he stepped on his toe. Bob Shmuley is an Apple salesman. I vow or neder myself, I will no longer eat apples. Make sense? It is an object, an apple, regarding something that is yourself only, not your son, not Bob Shmuley, anybody else. Yourself only, regarding an object that is normally an accepted state. It's not, for example, if I say Bob Shmuley is actually a pig salesman, I'm not going to eat pigs. That's not permitted anyway. So that vow is bogus. It's false. It's a fake vow. And I cannot say, son, he stepped on your toe. You are not permitted to eat apples. No, I cannot make somebody else do something under a neder. It's not to someone. It's only for myself regarding something that is normally not an issue. So you can say, here's another example for vows. I'm using, obviously, absurd examples, but... Young.
The service of the Lord, and then her father hears it, or later. And my question was this, it says on the time when he hears
right.
it, so it could be like a year later, right?
That's not
and
a vow.
What is that?
That's an oath. So oaths in a minute. Oaths are actions. Right. There's a difference between the dare and oaths. Oaths is an action. I will do something. I will not do something. Versus this object is acceptable or this object is not acceptable. It's an object based. The dares are vows, so to speak, based on objects. Marriage is oaths. Marriage is followed by oaths. The dares are for objects. This object is acceptable. This object is not acceptable. So for another example, as I mentioned the apples earlier, I can no longer eat apples. Apples are normally perfectly fine to eat. But I am vowing or I'm nadaring myself to prohibit myself eating apples. Because the apple is no longer considered clean to me. Well, the apple isn't in fact unclean. I am nadaring it to be unclean to me. It's an object. Not an oath. An oath is, I will do something or I will not do something. That's an oath. That is an action-based. So oaths are action, nadare are object-based. Yes, Bill.
You said this guy grows apples?
It was a joke, yeah. I was using it as an arbitrary example.
If he grows apples, why not just not eat his apples? Give them
up all right. I was using it just an example. I probably should use a better one. The point is, regardless of what it is, I am choosing an object that is normally fine, and I am declaring this object is unclean to me for whatever reason.
So is that a bad thing to do? Let's just say
maybe, for example, some of us have weight issues. I am now declaring that, donuts are unclean to me. Are they unclean? Well, they might be, but probably not. Because who made them? I hope they're not. But the donut, you are declaring something unclean, and you are making the object, the donut, is now considered like a pig. Or like blood poured on the ground. It's considered an unclean object. You are assigning an object as an unclean state that is normally a clean state. Does that make sense? That's what the dares work in. Your reasoning, you're trying to lose weight. Regardless of your reasoning, though, you are making an object either clean or unclean to you. Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty famous vow would be the one that Messiah made. There when he said, I will not drink of this fruit of the grape again
exactly.
until I drink it anew into the kingdom of heaven.
Exactly. Now, is anything wrong with drink? No. God made him. But he made an assignment that this is not acceptable to me, for this case, for a period of time, however long it was. Much like the Nazirite vow in that term, that the grape components and items made from grapes are considered unclean to you for a period of time. Are they in fact unclean? Of course not. They're perfectly fine. But during your nadir section, they become unclean. So that's the term we're referring to vows. Our Bibles translate vow. That's what it is. I mean, an object being accepted or not accepted that normally is perfectly okay. You can also vow or nadir yourself so that it is an optional thing. For example, let's see, optional example. Oh, here's an example, optional. The bird's nest and the eggs. Now, the Torah says you can take the eggs, not the mother. Well, you're not required to eat eggs. You could choose not to eat them at all. So it's optional to take the eggs or just leave them. Well, you could also vow yourself, says, eggs are the only thing I can eat. I will eat eggs. Eggs are only acceptable. So thus you must take it. Though the optional becomes no longer optional. Is that required? Because you've made their eggs your only source of food. Okay, you probably wouldn't live long. But say you did. That was your nadir. You made the egg the holy thing, and that is acceptable to you, but nothing else is. So the optional can become non-optional, become obligatory, or something that is completely acceptable become forbidden to you. It's an object-based. not to confuse with vow, with oaths. Oaths are action-based. I will love you forever, as or whatever we, for vows, for we do for wedding vows, right? I will be your husband, you'll be my wife to me. Those are all action-based things. They're not object-based things. Now, the wife may be object to you, obviously, or husband object to you as well. They're physical people. They're things. But it's your actions toward it, how you will treat someone, how you will act and behave toward other people, how you will conduct yourself in public, that you will choose never to curse again. Those are all oaths. You are, and they're action-based things, which you will do or you will not do. They're action-based, not thing-based. Does that make sense? That's how the Bible distinguishes them. So we understand oaths. You said the nadir, they are different. The Bible kind of, mingles them together as being kind of the same thing. They're not. They're actually different things. But that's what it's based on. So, that's discussing. That's in Matthew chapter 5. Yes, he didn't say not to make an oath. He specifically said how it's done. We'll discuss chapter 5. Well, that's what this is. That's what oaths are. Yes and yes and no is no. That's what an oath is. I'm declaring this is what it is and this is what it's not. That's an oath.
If God is watching to decide whether or not when we say something, he's always a witness to whether we mean it or not, because we could be saying something we have no
authority over it. Right. Like we can make an arbitrary or incorrect oath.
I'm signing initially these things to be an Adventist at that time. And when I was seeing this, it scared me because I thought, what have I done? I mean, I could have said and done something.
Who knows?
But is that kind of like the lines?
Along those lines, right. As far as she heard that or not, she's referring to paperwork you may sign or something you agreed to do and you didn't have the full understanding as implications or ramifications for your actions. They'll discuss that shortly in a moment as well. Because that.
Signing
something that you didn't realize the consequences behind it. For example, you cannot specify an oath that makes you or someone else break a commandment of God. That's called invalid oath, invalid agreement. So for example, you cannot assign or make an oath, or even an object to, but usually an oath, there's an action based, that would make yourself or somebody else break a commandment of God. That's considered invalid. Your father, known as God, would invalidate your oath. Well, that's what it said, because you're breaking his house rules. He would invalidate it. I'm not gonna apply this. Anything that dishonors your parents, for example, is an oath that would be invalidated, that breaks one of the Ten Commandments. Anything that causes your, for example, there's probably something. So if you can think of one, great. But yes, Jeff.
A very common oath that people make is, I will never talk to you again.
That's a great one. Yeah, never see you again. Get out of my face. There, you don't darken my doorstep. Yeah, it does happen. It does happen. So those oaths that make you break a commandment you can't do. So oaths have rules. Yeah, oaths have rules. And some of the rules are various things, but one of the rules we're right off to, this is Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5 gives, Messiah points out a correction in the oaths that had been growing in their exorbitant word choice and how what they wish to declare their oath upon. Yeah, there are a lot of songs about that too. You know, my love is like the whatever, blah, 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 lasts forever. Like the Rockies may fall, but my love lasts forever. Sinatra sang that song, right? I think he did. Anyway, this is Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 33. You have heard that it was said of those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. This is chapter 5. I read from verse 33 through 37 of Matthew. But let your yes be yes, your no be no, for whatever is more than these is evil. An oath is a yes or a no. That's what they are. I will do this. I won't do that. That's what a yes is. I will, or no, I won't. That's what oaths are. When he's referring to swear by an object, meaning I won't, I'll never speak to you again until pigs fly. Well, now you're swearing by pigs flying. What happens if there's a tornado? Guess what? Pigs fly. So things happen. Don't swear by an object, because the object, you have absolutely no authority. That's all God's domain, not ours. Your yes, your yes, no is no. That is what an oath is. I am this, I will do this. Regardless of what they live longer or shorter than me, I'm going to do this. Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, it seems like a common thing that that Yeshua is railing against would be an oath like, as God is my witness, you're never going to set foot in here again.
Exactly. You're swearing by an object that is way beyond your control. You have no authority to use whatsoever. And by in the statement he's using, he's making sure that God will afflict the person that God will afflict that me individually if this ever happens. Do you want that? I don't. God's affliction is not so good. So earths have rules. Objects, which nadirs are not involved. Those are rules for actions. Without objects. Without an object, which means you can't swear by an object or an individual. You can't swear by God, you can't swear by heaven, you can't swear by the stars, you can't swear by dirt, you can't swear by cities, you can't swear by anything that exists, you can't swear by. Because those are objects, those are nadirs, not oaths. Oaths are actions. I will do this. Period. Yes.
Is that why in the gospel reading, Yeshua was all over the scribes and Pharisees because they were saying, they were swearing by the thing that was in the altar, and he's like, you know, which is greater, the thing in the altar or the altar that cleanses it? So
right.
He's kind of like saying the opposite of what you're teaching right here.
No, it's the exact same thing. You can't swear by the altar. You can't swear by even God. You can't swear anything. That's his point out. You don't swear any of those objects. Those aren't objects that you have any power or control over. Your yes is your yes, your no is your no. That's all you get to say. Okay. It's the objects, you can't use them. I cannot swear by God. Is God under me? Yes, I think they're actually getting into that in certain states. Yes, the court does require that. I'm sure they still do. That doesn't mean that you as an individual have to agree or do so. There is an alternate form. I forgot. I've never been to court to do that. I think it's like I do affirm, whatever. Affirm. I mean, I will agree to say the truth. That it is your, that's between you, him, and God. I wouldn't do so.
But isn't that what that is?
Yeah, that you're using an object to make an oath.
Okay, so he may be making an oath on an object.
Which is incorrect. Not can to do that. He just literally asks you, tell you. Tell me for sure, is this true or not? You say yes or no.
That's what I did.
Then that is sufficient. Then that's what is sufficient. As opposed to swearing by an object. So oaths don't allow objects. And the dares, which are about objects, have only to do with something that is permissible. You are making it not permissible. So you can, and a dare on an object has nothing to do with oaths. It's not a swear by an object. You can't swear by objects. Objects either permissible or not permissible in vows or the nadirs. And oaths, you can't use objects. So Torah does not permit such things. Wait a minute. What about King David? He did it a whole bunch of times. King David, well, that's Psalms. He reads about, but as long as the heaven lives, and there's a few phrases he uses. Swear by God, swear by the stars. He used a couple times. What about him? Yeah, don't use a man as an excuse to break a command. So just because he does something does not mean he was completely right in doing so. Now, secondary, he was also acting as Messiah in those times, some of those times at least. Does Messiah have power over any of those objects? Well, yeah, he helped make them. So if anyone's going to have power over them, it is the only one who created them. The person who has power over an object is the person who created it. So Messiah and God can swear all they want by an object, because they can destroy it or remove it or add it or build it. It's their decision. We can't do so. So they have the power to do so. You, me, everybody else, keep your mouth shut. Make sense? So that's the nature of nadirs and oaths. and how they are separated and what they are rules regarding. I'm going to fly a little faster because I'm out of time already. Let's see here. Yep. So we may look at this. Okay, well, so the nadir is an oath. Men, tough luck. You make an oath. You make a vow, whatever it may be. You live with it. That's the way it is. Girls, you have an option out for certain periods of time during different times of your life. If you're a young girl, you have your father can overrule it. Or if you're married, your husband can overrule it. If you're divorced, tough luck. You're like a guy. Deal with it. You're on your own. That's how it works. We may say, well, how come? Why? Simple. If you have, you, me, every person here, is called a bride. Who is our father? God. Or Yahuwah. Who is our husband? Messiah. So as long as we're under God's rule, he can say, bride, I'm overruling your vow. When we're married, Messiah could say, bride, I'm overruling your vow. This is the symbols behind it, bride, which is you and me and every other room, everybody else who follows Messiah. This is who we are. Do we want them to overrule our vows and our oaths? Yeah. So that symbol's behind it. So it's written here for us to recognize that symbolism. We want to make sure that our father and our husband can overrule our own false speakings of our mouths. We have a, what's the thing you can't, the one thing you can't control is your tongue, right? Yeah, do you want someone to overrule that? Yeah, else you're in serious problems. So that's what we're after, right? That's the symbolism behind it. So that's why she gets to get times overruled and which times which she's not overruled. Okay, let's move on past the vows. Any questions regarding vows in general? All right. The Midian, that's pretty obvious what happened there as far as chapter 31, as far as the separation, as far as the war. I want to point out to you, unlike normal humans, Moses is wise. When God spoke to him, said, you take vengeance to Midian, and then after you're going to die. Does Moses delay? No. Does he delay? Delay taking vengeance on Midian. He goes right to the task. He knows when he's done, he's going to die. This is it. And he's like, okay, I'm going to sleep in this weekend. I'm going on vacation, God. I'll get back to you next month. I'll come back. He doesn't drag it out. He stops. He goes right back. All right, arm yourselves. Go to war. He doesn't delay, even though he knows it's his end. It's the opposite of what most humans do. We want to drag things out and kind of make things live longer. He's not required of that. So, good man. So he's obviously not wasting any time. He gets a 1,000 from each tribe. I argue, personal opinion, I don't believe the tribe of Levi was included in this thousands. Because the way in which the spoils were divvied up after they returned would make a lot of sense if Levi was included in the soldiers that went. But Jewish tradition says Levi was included. That's just, it's my personal opinion, so you may argue how you want to see fit. So thousands go out, obviously they all make it back. Great, good job. Yay, high five. Now, they come back with a whole bunch of women. As I mentioned before, the women obviously were objects of the sin that Balaam had done at Beor. So God obviously held against the Midianites. No, he doesn't do the Moab, the Midianites. It's the men, the women, and boys. Not the girls. So Midian gets wiped out with men, women, and boys. There's other things I didn't mention earlier when we talked about this topic. Those of you who are fathers, or even have fathers, most of us have fathers, generally, we like our dads. Generally. At some point in time, we may not, but usually we do. When our dads live and our dads get old, or when we, as we have fathers, live and get old, do we have much of a future left in ourselves? Not generally, because it's now our kids' future that matters. At this time in history, as far as Midian's concerned, Midian's future depends upon the following generations. about growing, expanding, and continuing on, just like Amalek was. The men sinned severely against the children of Israel. They used their wives to do it. They didn't use their boys, but their objective was the future. Balaam had already instructed Moab and coerced Midian in with it that if you guys don't do something about these Israelites, they're going to take you over. They're going to wipe you out. So were the men concerned about themselves or their future? And what is their future? The future of the boys. So what does God take away from them? Themselves, their wives, and their future, the boys. The things that they were trying to preserve and take and keep. Make sense? So God took it all. He left the little girls because the girls do not assign themselves to a tribe, to a family. They are blended by whomever their husband is. That's who they attach themselves to, that new family line. So they could be accepted or brought in as, I don't know how old they all were, brought in as age appropriate to marry or not marry, whatever the task may be. And they are attached to that new family line. Spoils of war, so to speak. So Midian gets this recipient. Moab doesn't. Why didn't Moab go? What happened to Moab? How come God didn't say, okay, Midian did this and Moab did this, but we're only going to attack Midian? Why didn't God say, Moab, you too? Yes. Yes, Ruth is from Moab. She did give, eventually, through the lions, give birth to Messiah. The one thing, something else that God had told Moses, the children of Israel, about Moab. When they were entering the land, before they got there, he told them specifically, Moab's territory is not yours. You won't get it. Don't covet it. It's not yours. Same with Ammon. Well, because they're descendants of Lot. They were descendants of Lot. So because of that, they have their inheritance. This is theirs. Now, you may oppress them at some point in the future. They may oppress you, but their territory is theirs. You don't get to wipe them out. Yes?
So didn't he say that with Midian too?
He did not say it with Midian. He said it with Moab and with Ammon. He did say it with Edom. Edom, he included Edom as well. Edom's territory is not yours either. He did not include Midian in this, nor did he include Amalek. They get wiped out later. So Moab, the territory isn't yours. So you don't get to keep it. So he didn't include them in this destruction.
Well, Lot's daughters are just trying to preserve
Lot's mind. Daughters, yes. And that's how they got their... That's how they did it. Yes. It's an incestuous relationship. Let's see here. So the men go out. They all come back. Those of you who do the math, because numbers are kind of sometimes fun. 12,000 go out. 12,000 soldiers out of a 600,000 man army. That's a 1/50th. And how the spoils of war get broken up when they come back to Israel. So Israel proper, not the high priest. When the spoils of war come back, they put in two halves. Yeah, half soldier, half the people. Half people, the people. They have to give 1/50th, which corresponds to the number of people who went out of all their tribes. Makes sense? So God was reused the numbers. The soldiers, I'll do S. I always misspell soldier. We keep saying solder every time. Soldiers. It's 1 out of 500. Well, Levites would give a 10% of what they would normally offer, whatever they get, they get 10%. This is 10% of what this would be. So the soldiers are acting as Levites. No. They're acting. Meaning, because if you receive an object from the people... Oh. Here. God points out, when you have an object... I have an increase. Whatever it may be. Let's say I have cattle. I increase something. The 10th one is set aside for tithe. That's my 10%. In this case, God's using the 50th as the example instead of 10th, because he's using 1/50th of the people went. He's taking 1/50th of all the spoils. So the Levite would take a portion of it set aside. Sorry. The children would take a portion set aside. Of that portion, 10% of it would go to the high priest. So God's taking this number. He's acting it out. saying, all right, 1/50th of you made this gain. So of that 1/50th, I'm taking this value here. That will go to Levites. And of the Levites, they would normally give 1/10th of that, which is 1/500th. But instead of doing that, he said, the soldiers, you are going to give this 10th percent of that value. So the soldiers are acting like Levites because they're giving to the high priest. So he's pointing out that in this symbolism of number play, that God's taking the soldiers, you are going to act as Levites act in this cleansing of Midian. And why would God want to play with these numbers that way? The soldiers came back and a single one was lost. Not a single soldier died when they came back from fighting Midian. They all lived. Yes, that is part of why they do something total. Because they're acting like Levites. That's what Levites would do. You have to atone for when you commit sins. That's where the atonement process comes in. The problem is that, you notice when they atoned, the soldiers' commanders atoned, was there blood involved? No. They gave gold and jewels and such. Well, those don't atone things. No, they normally don't. But they did this time because they're acting as Levites, even though they aren't. And the whole reason, yeah, it's a strange play on. The whole reason why God's doing this, he's pointing at them, hey, soldiers, you didn't do this. I did. That's what God's pointing at them. I did it. You're working for me, not for you, not for Israel, not for yourselves. You're working for God in this task. So this is why this process was happening. God took temporarily the 12,000 soldiers and said, you are now going to act like Levites and you're going to go clean up this mess. Wipe out the Midianites for me. I'm going to take these recipients of this part that you would normally give. It goes to me. That's how God's playing with these numbers. He's reassigning temporarily identities to get the process done so everybody recognizes he's the one in charge. He's doing it, not them. And then when they all go back, when the 7 days of purification are finished, you'll go back, you're back to your normal status. Does that make sense? That's how God's playing with the numbers. It's a number game, but he's good at number games, so it's interesting to watch. Let's see here. Where was I? I'm going to jump a little further forward. I am not going to draw you a map. There's lots of maps. Lots of maps. And everybody disagrees on this map. As far as what territory belongs to who. And that's why it's really pointless to draw maps. Sometimes it's interesting, but sometimes it's really dumb.
But you know what's really interesting? Is he put the Levites right in the middle of the whole thing.
He did. I do have to draw a basic, simplified map, not the whole thing. So, something like that, Israel, terrible marker. Back to purple, that's good. I'll redraw that a little bit. That's better. Now you can see it. Basic Israel. You got three cities here. Three cities there. Levite cities. I might have brought them off to you. They're written somewhere else. People brought up this question. Well, how come I have... Oops, I'm losing my easel's falling down. I have 2.5 tribes over here. I have 9.5 tribes over here.
Is that the Jordan?
Yeah, it's the Jordan River. This little line here. It's not very clear. I'll try to redirect a little bit. Why would I need three cities to serve 2.5 tribes for refuge? I've got three cities to serve 9.5 tribes for refuge. So I said, well, these people are just more murderous. They're not. The cities is based on spacing. Which means nobody has to travel because Manasseh's up here. Gilead's here. Or Gad, sorry, here. Reuben's down here. It's spacing. No one's traveled too far if they commit a crime to get to a city of refuge.
Oh, you can get there quickly, huh?
Get there quickly. The goal is to get there within 2 days of walking or a horse show.
2.5 days?
Yeah, well, that's the normal, the desire. Wherever you did something, you get to a city of refuge, it's a 2.5 day travel to get there. That's the goal. Now, you may live on the other side of some mountain and take you 3 days. That's your problem. Run faster. They want to get their route to be soon, so you're not traveling forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and never actually get there before somebody kills you. So that's how they're all broken up. That was the intent. It's not because, you know, the eastern tribe are more, you know, murderous, and so they need three cities to cover the 2.5 tribes. It's because it's travel distance. Now, you also note of the 48 cities Levi gets... 48 cities. Yeah. These six are included. It says, it describes here the distinction as far as who gets what and how much of it. So if you have a big tribe, get lots of cities. Little tribe, less cities. Has nothing to do with your population. Zilch. And it has to do with the value of the city, the value of the territory. In this case, for example, you can actually look at yourself. It's in Joshua. Let's see, it says Joshua chapter... I wrote it down somewhere here. Ah, Joshua 21. Joshua chapter 21 points out that Ephraim gave four cities to Levites. And Dan gives four cities to Levites. But Dan is twice the size of Ephraim in population. Value of the city was what mattered. It's value, not by numbers of people, but value. For example, Judah could give hundreds of cities in the desert. It's a desert. Are they very valuable cities? No. They're desert. No one lives in the desert. Exactly. Where did Dan live? Dan was actually living in two stupid sections, way up here at the top and also down here along the coastline. His cities were far more valuable as far as the city's capability, the land's ability to produce food and produce things. So Dan gives four, Ephraim gives four, even though Dan's twice the size. Dan's cities are worth twice as much. They're more valuable. So it wasn't based on numbers of people.
It is too. I read that in our meeting.
Right. By the more... of the people. Right. And they didn't. They didn't do that. They did it based by the value of the land. That's how they did it. That's how it was done in Joshua 21. That's how they did it. They didn't break it up by number of people. They broke it up at this time. These men, they were divvying up. They set out what cities would be what. They all got together and decided all this list while presumably Moses was still alive. They have it all broke up and set. But they broke it up and set not based on population. They didn't. I can't say the moment in time which they changed it or where they did it at the time which Moses was alive, but they didn't do it that way. They did it by based on value of land. What was more valuable to someone? These cities are more valuable, those are less valuable. So we'll give the less valuable cities, we'll give them more of them. The more valuable cities, we'll give you less of them. Not based on numbers of people, but value of the city. Make sense? That's how it was broken up. It's right or wrong, not my business. That's what they did. You can argue they did it right or wrong, but that's what they did. So it's based on value of land. So for example, a city in the middle of Arizona or the Death Valley, for example, here in California, is not as valuable as here in Sonoma County. It just isn't. So Sonoma can support far more people than Death Valley can on crops. Good luck on growing much in Death Valley. No, there's some lizards, some cactus, and some and drive-by people who crack eggs on the sidewalk to watch them cook. That's about all you get down there. There's not much to it. It can't support you, even though it has a large chunk of land. But some mechanics for you far more because the climate is far easier and it's a more valuable territory, a valuable area. So they did it based on value of area, not necessarily population locations. That's how they did. Right or wrong, that's what they did. What it did on location, well, obviously based upon these major cities, they would make sure travel distance was taken into account. Levites get certain territory. So they have the city. I'm drawing the city square. Realistically, I've never seen a square city. Those of you who make cities, make them square. Why? I've never seen one square. They're always sprawled out. But anyway, pretending a city's square, whatever size city is, it is the size it is. Levites get 1,000 cubits out to the city for their animals. 1,000 in all sides. And then past that is another 1,000 cubits where there are vineyards and fields. So another 1,000. That's the territory. So this here is a city. And this here is the animals. So it's a little animal. Here's a head, body, legs, and a tail. Animals live there. And over here is where the vineyards grow. And the wheat and whatever else way outside. That's Levi's territory. That any city they get, that's what they get. Regardless of how big the city happened to be. If the city could support 10 people, it's a relatively small city. If it can support 1,000 people, it's relatively big. 10,000 people, it's enormous. Regardless what size city it is, this is the territory which they get that belongs to them. Everything outside is fair game for anybody else. You can put a village out here, pull a house out here, put a little farm, picket fence. Do we want out there? It's fair game. But inside the territory is Levi, because Levi doesn't get to own anything. They don't get to, the possessions aren't theirs. They don't get to own the land. They get to use it forever, but they don't get to own it. This stuff out here transfers from person to person as Jubilee comes and goes, as they sell and they do what they wish to do. That's how the villages or the houses outside. Levi, that's how it's broken up. This is their territory, that's what they get. Inside they get to own forever. Levi, inside city houses, as long as the city's walled in particular, but Levi always gets to, whatever they sell or buy a house inside the city, it's always theirs. They don't, usually it doesn't return. In the rest of Israel, if it is a walled city, applies the same way. If it is an unwalled city, it returns the original owner. Okay? That's for the rest of Israel. That's what their cities, obviously I doubt they would truly square, but that's the general idea of what they would look like. Let's see here. Okay. That is how they camped. It is a symbolism of what they camped. A big, large, rectangular square. That's what they did. That's the reason why the cities were drawn up this way. No, it's a square. It's a square. It's a very large square. Right. Let's see here. I'm out of time to cover anything else, really. Are there any questions? Comments? Things I can... There's something I do need to mention before I leave, because I want to point out this. It's important. The unintentional killing, the unintentional killer, the guy who killed by accident or whatever the case would be. 1 John talks about this type of topic. He points out in 1 John, this is chapter 2 and 3, anybody who hates another is in darkness. And if you hate another, you are a murderer. Okay? So this unintentional murderer, as any time you hate another person, you just became an unintentional murderer. And you are guilty. I know, it's hard to be nice. Some people, you know, they may drive you over the wall. Doesn't matter. When you hate another person, you just became an unintentional murderer. This is John, 1 John, sorry. It points out in chapter 3, verse 13 through 16, that anybody who hates their brother is a murderer. So these cities of refuge, however they happen to be shaped or not shaped, this is where it comes up earlier. We're discussing, when, as Rose pointed out, what if I choose to forgive somebody? And you can. That doesn't mean God forgives them. So let's say you hated somebody. Hate your brother. We're discussing the difference of hate. Hold on. There's lots of issues. Hate your brother. You are now a murderer. You hate your brother. Now, as I mentioned before, as Rose pointed out, okay, well, if an accidental death, I kill somebody by mistake, something goes wrong, negligence, whatever it may be, and the families forgive me, am I then forgiven? Only by that family, not by God. When you hate your brother, you may say, God, let's say a year goes by, 2 years by, you realize, oops, I was acting wrong, I should be loving my brother, I go with repentance, okay, I don't hate you anymore. I love you now, brother, I no longer hate. But you did hate. You did hate at some point in time. So at one point, you were a murderer. At some point earlier when you hated your brother, you murdered him. You killed him. You may not... I'm used to kill, you know, loosely, quotes. You didn't actually kill him. You in your heart, in your mind, you killed him. You may repent. You may say, I no longer hate him anymore. You may come to the point, I love him now. Symbolically, you already killed him years earlier. So symbolically or spiritually, you are already guilty of murder. Even though now you no longer hate him. You hated him. You, at one time, you did hate him. Therefore, one time, you spiritually killed him. Because you hated him. So when you, I know, I'm not. Every human goes through this. Every human goes through this. It doesn't matter who you are. So every time, no matter who you are, we will all be murderers because we hated somebody that we should not have hated. Now we're not saying hating evil. You can hate evil all you want. Hating a person, We're talking about hating a person. You hate a person, you hate your brother, you are a murderer, and you are guilty. Now, you may go to that brother the next year, or next day, whatever, and say, I'm so sorry, I was mad at you, I hated you, I wanted you dead, whatever. Your thoughts, who cares what your thoughts were. But now I love you, you're a great friend, blah, 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 and be great and happy. Which is great, that's what you should be doing. But that doesn't mean you're then guiltless from the time that you hated him. The time that you hated him, you still have to pay for. You still have to pay for the murder you did by hating him.
What about the other person that's supposed to be your brother?
Right.
Says the meanest things to you, says the meanest things to you.
This has nothing.
Yep.
This has nothing to do with what somebody else does to do. This is you and me. This is our job for ourselves. So this murder guilt that we're now guilty for, we have to pay for it somehow. And how do we pay it? Well, it says, the way which it's paid for, the spiritual one, is the death of the high priest. So death. Right. Of high priest. So in order to convert from this, I'm guilty for hating my brother, I'm a murderer, to I am no longer guilty, and I've paid for it, the high priest has to die. So, who in the room is not guilty of murder? We're all innocent now, because he died for us. But at any point in time which we did not accept him, guess what? We're all guilty, regardless of how we actually feel anymore. Our feelings have no bearing on it. So Rose pointed before that the family may forgive, and that's great. That's wonderful. That doesn't mean it's not paid for. Right? Messiah's death, or the high priest's death, has to actually be the one who pays for it. Even in our hearts, if we didn't physically kill somebody, it makes no difference. It's all the same. But when you've accepted him... So as long as you love him or agree with him or follow him, you cannot hate. But you're human. So every time you hate somebody, you realize, oh, crud, I killed somebody again. Yeah. All right, God, Father, High Priest, my Messiah, please help me through this again. Forgive, die again for me. Each sin, die again. Make sense?
So yes. In the event that the priest dies in that city, and now the guy who accidentally killed somebody, oh, I'm going home now. Okay, so he goes home and because the high priest died, but the Avengers waiting outside the gate for him.
Now the Avengers consider
premeditated
murder.
Okay, now if the Avenger kills him,
right,
the Avenger's guilty now.
Correct. Of premeditated murder, which is the death penalty. It's not accidental. That is an intentional murder then.
Automatically dead.
Right.
So it would be to his advantage to forgive him and
and move on with his life. Get over it. He does this for every one of us.
Well, yeah.
Anybody who hates somebody else is guilty of murder of the person.
But I mean, that's what
the right. That's the process.
The Christian people or
no. If he is your high priest, then it's for everybody. This is regarding you, not them. Regardless what somebody else does, doesn't do, that's between them and God. It is our job to not hate them. And it's the hardest thing we'll ever do. To not hate somebody who you truly despise. But guess what? That's the point. Because God doesn't despise. He is love. That's his nature. That's his job. So it is our job to convert this hate into love so that the death of our high priest actually means something. Else we're still guilty of death. Still guilty of murder. Yes, you do. Go ahead.
13 says, okay, this is what you're talking about earlier.
Yes,
let's go back to it again. Do not be surprised, brethren, if the world hates you.
Yep. Yeah. Who cares what they think?
Yeah.
Who cares what they think?
You need to handle your own issues. The God can worry about them.
Yep. It's hard. It's not very fun. I get that. But guess what? That's the nature. You want him to be your high priest. That's a good thing. Yes, Carrie.
Well, there are different ways to love people.
There are.
You know, I mean, if there's somebody, you know, the scripture also commands us not to be stumbling blocks to our brothers.
if there's somebody who just happens to be a stumbling block to you, it's not against the rules for you to remove yourself from their life, even for a period of time.
Right.
If that helps you not
get
hate
that.
Them every single day because you need space to be able to move past what
whatever the
you're
issue
dealing
is.
With,
right.
That's okay.
Because
that's loving them to let
from
them live their life. and loving God and
right.
yourself to deal with your stuff in space.
Wait, that's well put. Yes, two people. Go ahead, Pat.
We have a good example of that when Paul went out from the rest of the Christians because he was a thorn in their side. And they separated just because, you know, to bring peace... to have peace in the church.
That's true, he did. For a couple of reasons, that's true. Yes. Bill.
Yeshua said, if we want forgiveness from the Father, we have to forgive this person here.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're not forgiven.
It won't work, right. If you can't forgive, you won't be forgiven. So you may hate somebody. If you can't not hate them, then you'll be hated. Same principle. Not by God. The point is you'll be hated too. This murderer, the unintentional murderer, we're all guilty of it. That was my point I would point out to us. Every one of us is guilty of it. We're all unintentional murderers. We don't really want the person to die, but we hate the person. We're mad at them. We're, for whatever reason, we are unintentionally, we killed them. Oops, I didn't mean to actually hate. I'm sorry. Well, how do you fix that? His death has to do it. You have to go back to him. Sorry, God. Sorry, Messiah. I killed you again. It is. It is. But we do it all the time. That's the nature of hate. It's an awful thing. Yes, Bill.
Driving down here from Cloverdale, I killed dozens of people.
The drivers. Driving down from Cloverdale, I killed dozens of people on the freeway.
I love everybody.
Right. Any questions or comments regarding what we covered today? I took you way over time, but I started crazy late. It's all my fault. Any other comments or questions? Let's close the prayer. Almighty God, our great Heavenly Father, thank you for our time with you, for showing us what is good and right. Help us to apply what we learn. To do what is fair, what is just, to love one another and love your people, regardless of what happens around us. Grant us peace, Father. Grant us a good rest for Shabbat. We love and trust you. In Yeshua's name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L.info. Hallel.info.